And we've got a man on the show to talk about all things Italian football and to discuss both last night's games and tonight's Juventus Galatasaray tie as well. He's a man who we haven't had on the show in a very long time indeed. And I'm delighted to say that joining us today from Goal.com is their Italian football expert, Mr. Chris Vokes, joining us on the line today. Chris, man, it's been far too long. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, mate. How are you doing?
Not bad at all, Ollie. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. I'm sure you are, like myself, reeling from the late equaliser that Brighton got yesterday against Sheffield Wednesday. So before we get into Italian football, is there any hope? Can we find a win after? Can we stop the 10-game stretch without a win?
It just always happens when we come up against an ex-Wednesday player. Like, whenever... Whenever we come up, we've just got to stop playing against players who used to play for us. Like that's happened so many times before. Alan Quinn, Richard Cresswell, whoever's left Wednesday has scored against us next time. But Keith Andrews did it last night.
But we get rid of so many players, Chris. I mean, there are so many players that leave Wednesday and go off somewhere else, and suddenly you see them, you know, at the top of the Championship in the Premier League. You could pick a pretty decent side out of the players that have left Wednesday, can't you?
Can do. The worst one ever was Darko Kovacevic. We sold him for 2.6 million, and about a year and a half later, Juve paid 14 million for him.
Yeah, we will avoid talking about Wednesday for much longer, because I'm sure many of our listeners aren't too fussed about the championships going on. And to be honest, you and I might just end up getting depressed. So let's talk to something a little bit more positive and talk about Serie A. And I want to ask you a question slightly off the beaten track, if you will. Eddie Onassi, with this heroic move of catching a mugger whilst he was at a restaurant the other day. Have you heard of any other stories that are quite like this, of a footballer, especially in Italian football, being involved in a situation like this?
I seem to remember Leonardo Bonucci headbutting somebody who tried to mug him, or some such story previously. You see the funny ones, don't you? Like there was obviously Duncan Ferguson catching somebody who'd robbed his house. One time, I remember going back to Sheffield Wednesday, all of a sudden, Kevin Pressman chasing somebody who'd stolen his car by using his wife's car, racing through a field to catch them and sitting on them while he called the police. there's some brilliant stories about people like apprehending criminals, but yeah, I'm sure there's a long, long string that people come up with, I'm sure.
It's a shame that we have this really nice off-the-pitch story for Serie A of Onassi catching this wallet thief, this mugger, if you will, in Italy. And yet we have, of course, what happened last night with the Napoli fans tearing apart part of the Highbury area of London and around the Emirates. What kind of repercussions do you think are Napoli going to be expecting from this sort of behaviour from their fans?
Well, it's going to be an interesting one, because I remember when Liverpool played Napoli in the Europa League a few years ago, it might even still have been the UEFA Cup at the time, and there being kind of battles in both of the games, kind of with the home fans intimidating the away fans in both of the matches around the areas of the stadiums, and there were Liverpool fans who'd cornered some Napoli fans into a petrol garage outside Anfield in the leg in England. And nothing was really done that time. But because now this has happened with Napoli fans, there's a possibility that could come into play, the fact that there has been incidents before with Napoli. So it's certainly going to be an interesting one. I don't think they'll get away with it scot-free. And it's certainly one that's going to be, like, UEFA will be keeping an eye on in the very least.
We've seen, obviously, a lot of trouble in the last kind of 12 months with Italian football fans and English football fans. Is that there was quite an intensity surrounding these two sides. I remember kind of the late 90s, early noughties, if you will, between Italian and English football. Has that rivalry ever really gone down between the fans, or is it building up again for some reason, do you think, in recent years?
Strangely, there's a lot of fans, kind of larrikins, kind of would-be hooligans in a way in Italy, who kind of aspire to the Hollywood version of the English hooligan. There's a lot who love the films such as Green Street and what have you. There's a lot that will wear, for instance, West Ham United gear just from having witnessed the kind of Hollywood version of a West Ham United fan in films such as that. Some kind of find it a bit of a joke that in recent years, Italians have said that everything has to be done to follow the English model in terms of the way that English football has gotten over the hooliganism problem. I remember one kind of protest from Sampdoria fans just after the West Ham-Millwall trouble a few years ago, when they basically said, you know, we should follow the English model. Are you joking? With a big banner in the stadium. They see still see kind of the hooligan element as a bit of a, you know, almost something to idealise in a way in some areas of the Italian kind of football fandom. So it's a very strange situation whereby they almost look forward to these games as an opportunity to have a bit of a skirmish, if you like. And as we know, for the most part, that's out of English football now, certainly inside the grounds. Like you don't see it around the ground so much anymore. Some clubs still kind of do the odd meet via text messaging or forums or whatever. We know that the problem's still there a little bit in England, but nothing like it used to be. And certainly not to the scale of kind of shop windows and stuff being put through, as happened with Napoli fans.
It was a horrible night off the pitch, of course, for Arsenal fans. A horrible night on the pitch for Napoli fans, of course. It was Arsenal were very dominant, and they've been in a great run of form. But what can be said about the Napoli performance? Were they really off the pace, or were Arsenal just so dominant that Napoli weren't allowed to play?
I think the pace has something to do with it in that, you know, 20 years ago, European football was very much of a pace that suited Italians more than anyone else. And in the English media, there used to be a lot of talk of how English teams had to adapt to the pace of European football. That's gone, you know, completely 180 degrees now. And it's Italian football that has to learn to play at European pace. And certainly Napoli didn't do that for the first 15 minutes of the game last night, and two poor mistakes allowed Arsenal to score goals. First of all, Juan Camilo Zuniga didn't track Aaron Ramsey. He slowed and kind of trotted back, and when Ramsey got onto a second ball, Zuniga was nowhere to be seen. He squares for Ozil to score. And then, obviously, when Britos didn't get an easy clearance away, Arsenal went and scored a second. So, you know, I think they paid quite heavily for having a slow start, but then that's going to happen in Europe. You've got to start quickly, or else you can find yourself, as Napoli did, two goals behind and chasing the game. I thought that at times Arsenal passed the ball around Napoli with a bit too much ease, but then there were also stages, albeit with Arsenal maybe having taken their foot off the pedal, the worst stages when Napoli showed that they could get some half chances, they just weren't able to create the full kind of goal-scoring chance that maybe a Gonzalo Higuain might have been able to do.
Was there maybe an underestimation slightly after the great win it was to get 3 points against Borussia Dortmund at home? Do you think maybe Napoli went to Arsenal thinking we should be able to grind out a draw fairly comfortably here in England tonight?
I don't think so, not at all. Arsenal are in fantastic form. I don't think they underestimated them necessarily. They just started off on the back foot a little bit too much as anything. You know, whether there was a mental kind of idea that they could go and get an easy draw, I don't think so at all. I think they'd have thought that if they could overcome the first 20 minutes without any issues, then maybe the draw might be the best kind of scoreline to play for if they're in a position to do so. But, you know, it's all about that getting that good start and getting into a position where you can start to dictate a little bit of what goes on in the game, and they certainly didn't do that. They weren't able to do that on Tuesday night.
Another side that started slowly in the Champions League was AC Milan on Tuesday. It's been a poor start to the season. Do you blame the majority of the problems on injuries, or is there really a problem in Allegri's side because they haven't started well in the league, and they were really poor, I felt, in the first half last night against Ajax?
They were abysmal, weren't they, in the first half? Yes, they improved second half, but to be conceding, I think after 25 minutes, the stats were that Ajax had 74% of possession. It really was a ridiculously kind of off-the-pace game. We said about Napoli being off the pace. Well, Milan were off the pace, and Ajax hadn't even raised the pace. You know, it was a kind of Italian pace game, if you like. The ball was being knocked around with a little bit of ease without too much kind of energy in the game. And yet Milan just weren't with it at all. And it was very, very disappointing. And yes, they've got a lot of injuries. Yes, in the league at least, Balotelli is suspended at the moment. But the way that they've started this season, very similar to the start of last season, you know, Allegri has got a lot to answer for, I think, because as much as he certainly hasn't been helped out by the fact that obviously a year ago they sold Ibrahimovic and Thiago Silva, they've still brought in players. They've still got players who are much better than a lot of the teams they are below in the Serie A table. They showed in the second half last night that they could take it to Ajax. The question mark is why they didn't do that in the first half. And I just don't think Allegri's getting the best out of this squad at the moment.
Are we seeing Balotelli? It was all sunshines, rainbows, lollipops and everything last season. Are we seeing Balotelli getting frustrated in these first few weeks of the season with the lack of effort maybe and the quality around him at the moment in this AC Milan side? Because we have now seen him go off the rails slightly in the last few weeks. We have seen him throwing those tantrums that we sometimes see on the football pitch. And we didn't see much of that last year in the second half of the season once he joined.
I think he realises now that for the first time in his career, he is the one and only. You know, as much as people say, for instance, Lionel Messi is a one-man team at Barcelona, Milan, and I know they won without him at the weekend, but Milan really at the moment are pinning an awful lot on Balotelli. Similar to, again, like going back to last season, they were basically bailed out by a once-in-a-lifetime run by a 19-year-old Stefan El-Shaarawy. Then when Balotelli came in, a lot of the responsibility came onto his shoulders. And watching the game against Napoli last week, it was kind of Balotelli's career in a microcosm in a lot of ways. Yes, he missed a penalty for the first time in his life, but then also it was him making the half chances. He hit the bar. He was kind of frustrating in that he was going down every time he was clipped ever so slightly. He scored a fantastic goal. You know, it had everything that he does. But then in terms of the other 10 players on the pitch, you just didn't see what was coming. They look abysmal at the back at times. They don't seem to have an awful lot of invention from midfield. And it's basically almost come back to the point that they were in a couple of years ago when it was, let's stick it up to Zlatan and see what he can do. And since Ibrahimovic is not there, it's almost like Balotelli is the kind of replacement for that. And there's not an awful lot that you can say it positively about the 10 players behind him at the moment.
Who are they missing more, do you think, Chris? El-Shaarawy at the moment, obviously out with injury, and his friendship with Balotelli off the pitch as well as his linking play on it was important, I felt, last season. But also, you know, Kevin Prince-Boateng has gone. He is now at Schalke. Who's been missed more in these last few weeks?
Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I'd say that Boateng was a strange one for me because as much as, you know, he had a great first season, wasn't so great after that for Milan. I think when you look at the way that he was playing far too high at times, he was playing almost as a false number nine. He was expected to play as a trequartista, which he very much is not. You know, the fact that they offloaded him when he'd just scored two goals that had taken them into the Champions League was a bit of a strange one. It showed that he still had some value. I don't think it was necessarily the worst move in the world, given that they got a reasonably good fee for him. But at the same time, they're missing some of that kind of dynamic running, if you like, in midfield that Boateng could provide. And Allegri really didn't seem to fancy him in the midfield three. He always tried to push him further up the field. And, you know, they could do with somebody like him in there at the moment. El-Shaarawy, on the other hand, I think they are missing him to an extent, but then I think the second half of last season showed that, you know, things weren't always working well alongside Balotelli. I think I'm right in saying he only scored one or two goals after Balotelli came in for Milan. So it's really interesting, or it will be really interesting to see how El-Shaarawy and Balotelli do as a pairing and whether that works in a 4-3-1-2 with Kaká behind them, or in a 4-3-3 eventually with, say, a Niang on the right and El-Shaarawy on the left. Because they do, although they're not obviously of a similar ilk, they do tend to pick up similar starting positions in that El-Shaarawy was always good in between the lines. finding space between defence and midfield and picking up from there and running at defenders. He's not a last shoulder kind of attacker. And Balotelli really is not your archetypal number nine either. He likes to drop and make things happen himself. So it's going to be interesting over time as to whether they can really make a partnership between them. So yes, they're missing El Shaarawy in terms of what he gave last season, but whether him being in at the moment would make a massive difference, I'm not entirely sure.
What we do know, Chris, is that it's going to be a very tough task indeed for Milan when they go and play Barcelona. I think Italian football fans will probably just be hoping that Lionel Messi isn't back from his injury, of course. We do have an Italian side, obviously, in the Champions League tonight. Juventus taking on Galatasaray, taking on Mancini's Galatasaray. What's been the reaction in Italy to Mancini joining Galatasaray? And will that give them a bit more of an edge, do you think, at all? Mancini's so used to and knows the Italian game, obviously, inside out. Will it help them at all tonight?
I'm not sure he's going to have an awful lot of time in terms of being able to place the correct kind of systems in place to deal with Juventus. I don't think Galatasaray nearly as bad as the 6-1 defeat to Real Madrid made it suggest. Watching that game for long spells, at least for a good 30 or 40 minutes, they were probably the better side. And you know, if they'd taken their chances when they had the opportunities, then it could have been a very different scoreline. But, you know, Mancini going in there, it's almost a kind of, to some, it's a natural step. I'm a little bit surprised at it because Mancini's somebody who really likes a safe seat. You know, he took the Inter job when there was a serious backing for him in terms of cash, and certainly a year into his job, obviously, with the Calciopoli findings, they had an awful lot of money and a kind of large pool from which to pick, because Juventus weren't able to take players that they might normally have taken being in Serie B. Then when he went to Manchester City, obviously, again, there was an awful lot of money to spend. He got things his own way quite a lot in terms of backroom staff coming in. It was almost practically all his people in at Eastlands by the time he was sacked. And certainly if they'd have won the FA Cup against Wigan, then he might have got away with it and stayed at Manchester City again and be in a very kind of safe surroundings with all of his people around him. So it was a bit of a strange one for me, in that Galatasaray seem a long way off the pace at the moment. But then at the same time, I suppose you could say, well, Gala should be winning the league in Turkey. There's not an awful lot to suggest that they won't win the league. And also, there's not this expectation that they're going to win the Champions League. So if they were to get to the, say, quarterfinals, similar to last season, then it would be seen as a kind of decent result. So as long as he can do a half reasonable job in Europe, they're not expected to get out of the current Champions League group, to be fair. We're talking about next season and beyond. As long as they do a half-decent job in the Champions League and win Turkish titles, then it could boost his reputation once more longer term.
Juventus will take on Gala tonight with a very strong side, as always. And aside from the drop points to Inter, they have been near perfect this season in Serie A at the moment. Juve, will they be the favourites, do you think, going into this? This is a Galatasaray side, though, shouldn't really be underestimated too much.
I think they have to be favourites. You know, looking at what Juve have done over the past 2 years, particularly, I suppose, last season, with the way they really pulled away from the competition in Serie A. They knocked Chelsea out, albeit after a kind of stuttering start in terms of the Champions League form. And, you know, they got to the quarterfinals. It was very much seen as a kind of a platform from which to build, as much as Antonio Conte was saying that, you know, if you're talking about any Italian side, even Juventus challenging in the next few years, then, you know, you haven't got a clue. Well, you know, it's been proven in the past that teams just need a good run in the second half of the season, and Juventus has certainly got some of the building blocks in place. I don't think they'll necessarily challenge longer term, but when you look at this group, yes, Galatasaray are a big name, but you'd expect Juve to get out of the group. And as much as they drew in Copenhagen, were it not for the fantastic performance of Johan Willand in goal, it could have been about 10-1 to Juve, to be fair.
Does it change at all Andrea Pirlo's mentality going into this with the contract talks on hold until February, Chris, at all? I mean, for him, there is now some transfer speculation around him possibly leaving Juventus. Do you think that changes his approach to any of the games this season? Or, I mean, he's such a professional, though. Would it do that?
Well, as you say, I think he's such a pro, and he's so well versed in these kind of situations that, you know, he'll go out and he'll do his job. I think the key thing at the moment is the fact that Claudio Marchisio has just come back from injury, and with Paul Pogba playing just as well as he is, there's no way that Pogba really can be left out when it comes to the big occasions. So now, you know, Pirlo's position is starting to come under a little bit of threat in a way that it hasn't before. Juve are actually kind of postponing the talks in terms of thinking that they need to make a longer-term plan in what they're going to do exactly in midfield, because they do see Pogba as the long-term replacement for Pirlo. They don't want to lose Marchisio in the short term because they feel that they'll need him in the longer term to go alongside Pogba and Vidal. So it's interesting how they're going to play this in terms of wanting to offer Pirlo a rolling contract year on year at a considerably reduced fee to what he's earning at the moment. Pirlo obviously will want to have a little bit more security, either in terms of having a similar fee to what he has now, or having longer than a one-year deal each year being put in front of him. So, you know, they've got to play this really well, Juve. I think they can certainly do that in terms of rotating the the final position in midfield. You know, they left Pirlo out at the weekend. Marchisio will no doubt get a rest at times. Even Pogba and Vidal will be given their days off before Champions League games, obviously, as well. I think the interesting thing now is how they play it in terms of the contract talks, in terms of how they see Pirlo fitting in over the next year, 2 years. So it's a really interesting position now, because it could well be that come the end of the season, we're going to find a situation as we found in 2011 with Milan, that that Pirlo is at a bit of a loose end.
I tell you what, if he's looking for a place to play, I'm sure a three-year contract at Hillsborough be fine. If he wants it, I'll pay the money myself, kind of thing. We'll see. We'll talk about that at the end of the season, though, Chris, when it does come around. For now, big thanks to you for joining us on the show today, mate. We've taken up far too much of your time. I've just noticed that went like a flash to me, but we do appreciate you giving us some time. And next time we get you on the show, mate, we will talk about some Serie A league action as well, of course, as Champions League football as well, mate.
No worries at all. Thanks, Ollie.
Cheers. Thanks for joining us today, man. Chris Folks joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through a little bit of the Serie A sides and their prospects in the Champions League this year. Chris, top lad to have on the show. Always enjoy getting him on. And always nice to know that there is the odd Sheffield Wednesday fan out there in the journalism world. That's for sure. Juventus take on Galatasaray tonight. Roberto Mancini's brand new side. Drogba, Ilmaz, Schneider.